From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Lynn Neary. Warning to parents, the next story contains some seasonally sensitive information on the subject of Santa, so beware if there are any young ones nearby. As everyone knows, Santa sends helpers to malls all over the country around this time of year to find out what children want for Christmas, like these kids who visited one of Santa's mall proxies in Athens, Ohio over the weekend.
I want Barbies.
A train track.
The movie Song of the South. Walt Disney made it.
An M3 player. And flip-flops.
Ultimate Optimus Prime. And that DVD called Scooby-Doo's All-Star Laugh Olympics. Volume 2, it's a guarantee.
Uh-huh. That's all I want.
That was Braden Neese, Elise Smith, Brianna Neese, Derek Wilson, and Gracie Hanna. Usually the most challenging part of representing Santa is cajoling the shy and comforting the scared. But this year, even Santa's workshop is being hit hard by the economic downturn, and that means some kids may not get everything they want. So one man has been working with some of Santa's helpers to teach them how to gently limit kids' expectations this year. His name is Fred Honorkamp of the Charles W. Howard Santa School, and he joins us now. Welcome to the program, Mr. Honorkamp.
Thank you, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell me, have you noticed any difference in recent years in what kids might ask for?
We have. Children are little barometers of their environment. And they'll put a hand up to Santa's ear and whisper something like, can you get Daddy a job? Or can you help us sell our house? And in each of those cases, we say that we can't get Daddy a job. We can't sell your house. What we can do is Mrs. Claus and I know that you're going through a tough time, and we'll get down our knees tonight and say a special prayer just for you and your family.
What about when kids ask for really expensive things?
Well, we try and manage the expectations. First, Santa never promises anything. I weave in little stories about the North Pole. A child, for example, asks for an iPad, and I'll say, oh, I wish you hadn't asked for that. And they'll say, why? And I'll say, well, have you ever been to the North Pole? Well, of course not. But up there we have Building 2. You go out of the main lodge and the snow is very deep. You go down to Building 2 and that's where we do our electronics. And the little elf that's making the iPads is an elf named Rupert. And guess what he's doing? And the child will say, what? He's playing with them. We're way behind production. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think we're going to be able to fill the iPad orders.
And that works, huh?
It does work. But we've also seen the flip side of the economy. Boys and girls come up and say, Santa, we know that it's difficult for some families this year. Would you please bring my presents to somebody who can really use them?
Oh, how sweet.
It is. It's just heartbreaking. Just the other day, we had a young boy that came in and he said, Santa, can I get a new pair of sneakers? And I thought it was one of a list of presents. And I said, oh, wonderful. What else could I get? And he said, that's all. If you can just get me a pair of sneakers that don't hurt my feet, I'll be happy.
Oh, wow. Now, what about parents? Do they sometimes send Santa signals about whatever their situation might be?
They do. You can see them in the background. And when somebody asks for the new Nintendo 7000, you can see a parent shaking their head from side to side. And that's a clear indication for Santa to weave a story around how we're having technical difficulties with the Nintendos this year.
Yeah. Well, it was fun talking with you this afternoon.
I wish you and yours the very best for the holiday spirit.
Fred Honorkamp helps Santa's helpers get ready for Christmas with his Charles W. Howard Santa School in Midland, Michigan.
Harry Potter was a popular Twitter topic this year. The hugely successful film franchise ended this summer. So have we heard the last of Potter? Not a chance. Universal Studios said yesterday it plans to take its Harry Potter theme park attraction west. As NPR's Ben Bergman reports, the timing could not be better for California politicians.
Sadly, Daniel Radcliffe was unavailable. So in a ceremony long on pomp and short on detail, the big announcement was made by James and Oliver Phelps, who play the Weasley twins in the Potter movies.
It's our very proud honor to be able to officially announce that Hogwarts is coming to Hollywood. Hey.
The first Wizarding World of Harry Potter opened in Universal Studios Orlando last year. It's been a smashing success with two-hour lines just to get into the gift shop to buy $30 wands. Potter increased Universal's attendance 50% and made it, not Disney World, the must-see theme park of the moment in Orlando. Universal wants the same magic in L.A., and so does L.A. County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky, who's hoping Harry's wand can bring real economic benefit.
I see a possibility of the wand being used to produce $13 billion for the state budget, Governor, and throw in a few million for the county as well and get out of this morass we're in.
That governor he was talking to is Jerry Brown, who made the trip down from Sacramento.
It's a great day when we see investment in California. There's a lot of critics of California, a lot of naysayers, a lot of people moving to Texas. Well, there are those people. But there are even more people who are moving to California who are creating, investing, and building the dream that never dies.
Brown started the week announcing he would take a plan to raise taxes directly to voters to try and plug the state's massive budget deficit. So it was a welcome break to pose with a frosty mug of butterbeer and, more importantly, welcome an attraction billed to create more than 1,000 jobs.
Yeah, we have some tough times, but we are truly a state of imagination, and this great Harry Potter Park just pushes us that much further down the uncertain road where California is going.
Not the most reassuring words, but at least the governor can take solace in one fact. The new Potter Park will likely displace an attraction starring his predecessor, Terminator 2 3D.
I'll be back.
Ben Bergman, NPR News, Los Angeles.
One of television's most beloved commanding officers has died. Harry Morgan, who played Colonel Potter on MASH, died today at the age of 96. As NPR's Neda Ulubi reports, Morgan brought an avuncular authority to a show about the absurdity and horror of war.
MASH was funny, one of the best satires on television, about doctors cracking wise in an army medical unit during the Korean War.
I always look forward to the fall when the new line of weapons comes out.
It was often Harry Morgan as Colonel Potter who provided the moral outrage.
Every month there's a new procedure we have to learn because somebody's come up with an even better way to mutilate the human body. Tell me this, Captain. How the hell am I supposed to keep up with it? If they can invent better ways to kill each other, why can't they invent a way to end this stupid war?
Colonel Potter was decent, sympathetic, and he embodied a kind of folksy middle American sensibility. Take this moment when a higher officer is trying to strong-arm Potter into letting a talented, wounded marksman back into the field.
Chandler will be able to return to action a couple of days.
Good.
But it takes more than four sound legs to make a stallion run. It takes a sound heart and a sound mind.
It was one of those one-of-a-kind fits of character to actor to role, and they all served each other's needs.
James Poniewozik is the television critic for Time magazine.
He just seemed and carried himself like the last reasonable man in the middle of craziness.
A couple of days ago, somebody asked me if I thought MASH had made me a better actor.
In 1983, Harry Morgan spoke at a press conference about the ending of a series so beloved the last show drew a record 125 million viewers.
And I said, I didn't know about that, but I know it's made me a better human being. And there aren't many shows you can say that about.
Morgan alluded to his long career as a character actor, playing on Broadway, movies, and the TV show Dragnet before he got cast on MASH during its fourth season.
I've done about 100 movies plus, and this is my eighth television series. And believe me, in my experience, there's never been a congregation of actors put together that would come within a mile of this bunch.
I was holding this paper that said, Klinger is hereby declared nuts. Signed, Colonel Potter.
Jamie Farr played Corporal Klinger, the obnoxious, cross-dressing company clerk. He had a ton of scenes with Harry Morgan, and he says even in a cast filled with cut-ups, Morgan was infamous for being funny.
Oh, he was terrible. He was absolutely the worst. I mean, I wish you could see some of the outtakes. We have some great ones.
Farr says he spent most of the day exchanging emails and phone calls with members of the cast. He says Mike Farrell, who played B.J. Honeycutt, was a huge presence in Harry Morgan's last days. He kept everyone updated from the hospice with emails. The last one he sent today said Harry Morgan died today around 3 a.m., peacefully and in his sleep. Neda Ulubi, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
The types of videos Americans are watching online are changing. In the olden days, it was a lot of amateur videos on YouTube and old movies and TV shows on sites like Netflix and Hulu. Now, all three services are starting to feature their own professionally made videos featuring big names, such as Kevin Spacey, Deepak Chopra, and Madonna. NPR's Laura Seidel has a look at what's coming.
For a very long time, like 2 years, this was the number one video on YouTube.
Charlie bit me.
A dad made this video of Charlie biting his big brother's finger. It had more than 390 million views.
Ouch.
But in the last year, Charlie was knocked off the top five list. Now, there's another baby on top. Justin Bieber is the most watched with more than 666 million views. He's followed by a list of pros, Jennifer Lopez, Lady Gaga, Eminem.
In the last several years, thanks to many different types of video site, consumer demand has grown for more and more different types of entertainment content on the web.
Alex Carlos from YouTube Global says they've seen a growing appetite for videos produced by professionals. Take the Machinima channel on YouTube. It's geared towards video game lovers, and many contribute their own content. But this spring, Warner stepped in and produced a live-action series with professional actors based on the game Mortal Kombat. The series helps explain the motivations of characters in the game, like Sonya Blade and Major Jackson Jax Briggs.
Kano here. This Kano Lieutenant Blade is referring to as a ghost, and rumored to be the leader of the Black Dragon crime cartel.
The first episode of Mortal Kombat had 5 million views in its first 5 days of release. That's as good as a show on USA or TNT cable networks. This fall, YouTube announced that it would spend its own money on channels with professional content, like Dance On.
Hey guys, it's me, Sheena. I hope you had an awesome Thanksgiving. December is here. The holidays are in full force here in New York City, and there is a lot of dancing coming your way.
The CEO and founder of Dance On is Amanda Taylor. Along with some financing from YouTube, her channel will also be getting some content advice from Madonna. Taylor thinks she is part of the evolution of media.
Networks started on the radio, and then they moved to television, and then cable came about, and then hundreds more networks arrived. And now I think we're going to see a slew of new networks that are being born on YouTube and other digital platforms.
YouTube is laying the groundwork for these new channels with a complete redesign of its homepage. It incorporates a social element so that in a world of endless channels, people can find what interests them with help from friends. Two of the other major websites for video, Hulu and Netflix, are also buying their own shows. Steve Swayze from Netflix says they have the exclusive rights to House of Cards starring Kevin Spacey.
And we think this is going to be of great interest to Netflix members. It's a serialized drama, and it's not produced yet. We are actually licensing it exclusively to show at Netflix, and that's something that may have been on HBO before or may have been on Stars or Showtime or one of the other premium cable channels. Well, now Netflix is a new player in this ecosystem.
It's like in the early days of cable TV. HBO started out airing movies after they left the theater, and eventually it started producing its own shows like The Sopranos. Venture capitalist Mark Suster says Netflix has also purchased exclusive rights to a new season of a sitcom canceled by Fox.
It's Arrested Development.
Arrested Development, you probably know, was a very popular, or wildly popular, cult following of people who watched it when it was on television, and Netflix is going to resurrect it, and I bet a lot of subscribers are going to come with it.
Suster, who invests in internet video startups, says if Netflix and Hulu are going to survive, they will have to have exclusive content.
The reason Hulu, Netflix, and YouTube are now commissioning their own content is because the studio system is probably not all that keen for any of these players to succeed.
Suster says the old guard, TV networks and studios, haven't been looking forward to the day when they will have to compete against an endless number of online channels. But he also believes that day may have arrived. Laura Seidel, NPR News, San Francisco.